Well, in Midtown Manhattan, La Bernardine, a 3-star Michelin restaurant, sits. And when Tony, a traveler who visits many restaurants throughout the world, goes there, he gets the tuna tartare with foie gras, a legendary dish, which makes sense at a place that's known to be one of the most famous seafood restaurants in the world. Well, he doesn't just go to high-class restaurants. Tony also enjoys places like Joe's Barbecue in Kansas City, which he says is a transcendent experience. Tony, in his travels, experienced many cultures and food, 80 different countries, 1,500 different restaurants, even street food in Vietnam with a former president, on top of his fine French dining in high-class Paris. Well, Tony was a modern-day Qohelet, a teacher, a philosopher, the preacher, as it mentions here in the ESV, of Ecclesiastes. And he, like Qohelet, is experiencing the pleasures of culture and, for his case, culinary items of the 21st century. Well, today, we are going to take another tour, a guided experience through Ecclesiastes. And here, like Tony, experiencing these amazing restaurants, the teacher, the preacher, the philosopher is experiencing pleasure to the greatest degree. What is the conclusion from his experiment with pleasure? Is it meaningful? Is there satisfaction in life just from it? We're going to hear from the great teacher today. And we're going to find out, maybe together, is pleasure enough under the sun? Oh man, wild ride in Ecclesiastes. It's good, guys. So look with me. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this is also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I brought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind. And there is nothing to be gained under the sun. This is the word of the Lord. We're just joining us. We're going through the book of Ecclesiastes this summer. And we are with this guy named Qohelet. And it is his search, this preacher, this teacher, this philosopher, his search for meaning, as the narrator is letting us hear from this Qohelet. And the narrator's in the beginning and the end of this book of Ecclesiastes. And Qohelet uses poetry and visual images and experiments to try to get to the answer of this question, what is the meaning of life? And again, the editor, the narrator, has compiled Qohelet's adventures, this great king, this Solomon-type figure. And he wants us to learn from his gatherings and how to gain wisdom. Well, one of his first experiments here is pleasure. And he starts with his heart, all of himself, testing just from the nature of who he is and whether pleasure can bring true meaning. He wants to be happy. And he's going to see if this philosophy of seeking pleasure will truly satisfy. Well, we see just from the very beginning in this passage how this experiment ends. We are told right away, vanity, vanity, vanity. We hear this word over and over again in Ecclesiastes. This word hevel in Hebrew, meaning vapor, smoke. It's translated many different ways, meaningless or a vanity here, or enigma it can be translated. It's just the idea that you try to grasp for something and it just goes away. All of these things you're trying to find to cling on to that will give you something, it gives you nothing. It goes between your fingers. We've seen some of the images that Ecclesiastes gives us. The idea of death, that all things will go away. The idea of this vapor and smoke. And we have these symbols that are on the Vanitas table and also in the 16th, 17th century Netherlands as they painted these portraits of all their wealth and opulence and then next to skull saying that even this thing will go away. What is going on here? Is this book simply to depress me in summertime in Wisconsin? Come on, this is a good time, right? Why do you want to depress me in the summer? I think what's happening here is they're trying to deconstruct, the narrator this book is, some of the false structures that we have built our meaning in to maybe see above the sun, not just what is in the temporal world, that there is something more. Well, we see that what makes this experiment faulty is how Koheleth starts the journey. He kind of starts with the wrong starting point, and it kind of skews the whole experiment. He's used faulty measuring device. He's used the wrong chemicals in his experiment in trying to find meaning. And you see that as you read this passage. You might have heard this over and over again. I. The frame of reference for meaning for Koheleth, for this preacher, is his subjective opinion. If anyone wonders if the Bible has any relevance today, that really is the 21st century mind, our own search for meaning, that there is nothing outside of ourselves to find purpose and where to go. The idea that there is some outside revelation, there is something that can speak to us, is really not the American experiment. The self-individualism or the expressionism that defines much of 21st century America. What you find ironic in this passage is that this experiment that wisdom literature is using is the very reverse of what we would hear in the book of Proverbs. See, Proverbs starts wisdom with the fear of the Lord. The starting point is God. Here, the starting point in Ecclesiastes is the self. Not till the end do we see that the fear of the Lord should be the guide. What if I ran this experiment in my house? Right? Let's try this in my own home with four girls, right? What if we tried to find meaning of life through pleasure in the breed house? Ice cream would fill the freezer. Chocolate sauce would be all over the refrigerator. And bubblers would, there would be so many bubblers. You could each get three a day if you wanted to. That would be amazing. Yes, Claire's like, yes. One day, in this experiment, I'm assuming I would come downstairs and they would say, vanity, vanity, ice cream and chocolate sauce and bubblers, it's all vanity. By that point, it's too late. Stomach aches, sugar comas, diabetes, I don't know. See, even in our homes, the starting point isn't our children. It doesn't start with them. It makes sense that God says, honor your father and mother. It is a picture of starting to fear the Lord. That Aaron and I give ice cream, I think, and chocolate sauce in proportions, and only buy three bubblers a week, packs a week, yes. Because there needs to be a well-balanced diet. I wonder, what is our starting point for the quest of meaning in our life? Is it I, my own wisdom? Some of you here this morning will readily admit that your starting point for finding meaning is not God. That might be you this morning. I am so glad you're here. This is a great book to experiment. Where is true meaning under the sun in the material world? For some of you here that claim that God is your starting point for meaning, I want you to really question that. When you do not get the things that you want in this world, how do you react? And that might tell you more of what you think the starting point is for meaning, finding meaning in your life. Well, here is the experimental hedonist, finding meaning and pleasure in life. But I do believe this list that he's going to give us of the experiment of things that he's going to try to find meaning isn't simply a do's and don'ts list. That's an easy way to discredit Ecclesiastes. Oh, he's just going through moral vices. And that's all that the preacher this morning wants to do, all that Christianity does. They just want me to have no fun, to be stoic, to avoid these pleasures altogether. No, that is not what Ecclesiastes is talking about. That's not what Christianity is. God wants us to enjoy things, and we'll see moments of where enjoyment is in Ecclesiastes. But he's saying true enjoyment can only be found when we look of what is above the sun. See, the teacher here, the philosopher, is not the prodigal son. He does not consume and consume to lose his senses until he gains it again. No, the preacher has his wits about him. He is trying this high life, this pleasure of what it might be a fine wine or a beautiful garden. And he's wondering, will this satisfy? But pleasure for its own end, not looking for what above the sun, he will find is vanity. So I'll group the experiments into four: laughter, physical pleasure, creativity, and making money. The first, laughter. He says it is mad. I don't think it's meaning being senile. It's just saying it's folly to think that laughter will find meaning, the ultimate meaning in life. The idea of just laughing it off can really be a problem if that is your way of going through problems in life. You can laugh at your problems so long, but it's going to hit you at some point. I love what Zach Eswine says about this. He says, rather than face life as it is, the merrymaker drowns the hard facts in a sea of frivolity. You can only laugh so long, and then it's going to hit you. It's a story of Wayne Brady, who was on Whose Line Is It Anyway? He has a show in Vegas, a famous comedian. And he talks about a point in his life. It was his 42nd birthday. And he says this: I was there by myself in my bedroom. Just go ahead and imagine for yourself a brother in his underwear in his room with snot coming out of his nose. And that was the birthday that I was having. And I was beginning to say, I've got to make a change. All the laughter, all the money, all the success, he had just learned that his friend Robin Williams had committed suicide. And he was wondering himself, where is there meaning in it all? It's very sad that many times the church has just become a place where I get a pick-me-up. Preacher, tell me a joke. If my sermons or any of our sermons are just filled with jokes, we are not doing our job. If we're trying to get you just to laugh off everything by quoting movie lines and avoiding hard questions, we are not doing what we're supposed to be doing. Here's a quote. There is an argument about whether the person who makes people laugh or the one who makes them weep is of most use in the world. He that makes his friend laugh seems to me to do them much less service than he who makes them weep. And too often I have seen comedians that will admit that that is true. Well, he moves from laughter to drink. Sure, the experiment of alcohol is one that we might be familiar with. For many in Wisconsin, it starts young. It's an opportunity to loosen up, to talk at parties, to fit in, to find meaning. Many of my friends now, if they've moved from high school age, college age, to now adulthood, I see in their posts and my conversations with them that that experiment did not go very well. And many of my friends have really committed to sobriety. I find it very interesting that my non-Christian friends are more righteous about being teetotalers than I am as a Christian who drinks still myself. But they have seen that that experiment has not worked. But I don't think Ecclesiastes and the teacher is simply talking about the vices of drunkenness and alcoholism. No, I think this is the way that it's worded is this high-class food or drink. And he's finding that even this kind of good wine or whatever it might be does not satisfy under the sun. Go back to our friend Tony, this tour guide that went to 80 countries and 1,500 restaurants. He notes it himself in eating food that is more than just the temporal. There's something more. He said one time in a very small shack in Hong Kong that gave this meal, he said, when I ate, I felt like I was bumping against the walls of heaven. There is something more. In all his travels, he sounds like Koheleth himself. This Tony said this, I'd begun to believe that the dinner table was the great leveler where people from opposite sides of the world could always sit down and talk and eat and drink and if not solve all the world's problems, at least find for a time common ground. Now I'm not so sure. Maybe the world is not like that at all. Maybe in the real world, the one without cameras and happy food and travel shows, everybody, the good and the bad together, are all crushed under the same terrible wheel. I hope, he says, I really hope that I am wrong about that. You know, it's easy to rail against Wisconsinites' drinking habits. Maybe it's because we're a Germanic people that really we can hold our liquor better than the rest of the United States. That many of us in Wisconsin, the idea of going to festivals and Cheese Fest and Oktoberfest and all these things, it's drink and food and merriment and we enjoy it. There's no real reason to like rail against it all the time. I'm not saying that drunkenness and alcoholism is good. I'm not saying that at all. But I am wondering if there is a deeper sadness to it all. That food and drink cannot solve the problem. The darkness of winter. the alienation of a family member, our toil. No matter how much good Cabernet vintage we might drink, or how cold and refreshing a craft beer, or the smoothness of a bourbon, it cannot solve our problems. Vanity, vanity. Well, Koheleth goes on from just simply laughter and drinking. I mean, most of us, we've conquered those forms of debauchery. He goes on to the simple life. My house, my cabin, my garden, my creation. Truly, there is nothing new under the sun. Koheleth watched this old house, HGTV, Better Homes and Gardens. He watched the Property Brothers. He is project obsessed. From gardens to fireplaces to tweaking here to there to find perfection. I wonder if this hits a nerve for some of us. Sure, you can list other things of experiments of drinking and laughter, but no, not that. Not the American dream. Not my house. Not my property. Maybe it's okay to call alcoholism vanity, but do not call my perfect manicured flower garden vanity. I created this. I made this. So I'm here to tell you, oh, there's an exception. Your garden and your house is an exception. You can actually take those with you when you die. I love what Zach Eswine says again. Adam and Eve in all their gardening said this, one more tree and I'll be happy. Here, Koheleth is trying to recreate Eden, playing God. But no matter how much we say, one more star outside my house, one more throw pillow, one more flower, one more sweet home picture, it will not be the new heavens and the new earth. Well, then he goes to a level that many of us will never experience. Servants and performers and nice artwork and gold and the height of power and wealth. This is Elon Musk. This is Jeff Bezos. This is the planes that we build for people at Gulfstream. This is out of our price range. This is not the Appleton life. Oh, it might not be our life, but how we want it to be. Oh, if I was there, if I had that, I will arrive. Just one more thing. And how we follow these people on TV and magazines as we watch Cribs or the Kardashian life, the lax life. If I just had those kind of assistants, if I just had those kind of vacations, if I was that kind of person, I could have any man or any woman I want. A row house in Manhattan. Travel the world. Whatever it might be. But here, Koheleth is trying to show to you, I have gained it all, and it is not enough. It will not satisfy. I think it's at this point we need to like take a step back, right? And just understand our context is not the context of 1000 BC. Like, we are getting things here in the 21st century that would be the sense of opulence or the greatest in that time period. Talk about laughter. I can click through Netflix for days and months in finding things that can fill me with laughter. I can get food that people would never be able to experience throughout history at any time I want to by going to a restaurant or ordering it. If I want a certain item, whenever I want it, I can just click onto Amazon and it will come to me in 1 or 2 days. We are in the wealthiest time, in the wealthiest nation in history, that the poorest level, which is not good, I'm not saying poverty is good, is some of the highest level of riches in history. But in the midst of this experiment in 21st century America, do I even need to list all the stats of depression and anxiety? That the second leading cause of death for men ages 15 to 34 in America is suicide. Vanity. Vanity. Tony, again, this modern day Kohelet, this philosopher and teacher, this is time where he's experiences this great pleasure and opulence. And he says this, I'm trying to think of buying something that can fill the hollowness of my soul. And he laughs and says, maybe a car? In his summation, the teacher, the preacher, there's nothing he had not experienced. And he says these words at the beginning and the end twice, behold, behold. He's getting us to really think about this. He's trying to get our attention and rest it. Consider all of this that I've talked about. All of these things, all of this pleasure, it is striving after the wind. You cannot contain it. Cannot find meaning in it. It is a vapor. Again, Ecclesiastes is not there to depress us. It's to show us the experiments that will bankrupt us and to show us where true pleasure can be found. Maybe you're culturally astute enough to know the Tony that I'm talking about. The Tony, his name is Anthony Bourdain. Anthony Bourdain wrote a best-selling book when he was a chef called Kitchen Confidential that rose up to the top of the New York Times bestseller list. And then he was able to cash that in to start a travel show, one of the most famous travel shows ever, called Parts Unknown. 12 Emmys, a prestigious Peabody Award. I mean, Anthony Bourdain was who people wanted to be. He was cool. He smoked. He went around the world. I mean, that is the millennial life. And he had it. Presidents ate with him. Movie stars filmed him. He had everything. And then he took his life. No drugs, no alcohol in his system. And he hung himself. There's a documentary called The Roadrunner about Anthony Bourdain, and it's filmed all these people that were friends with him and people that produced his show and just loved him. He's just an amazing guy. And they're all perplexed of what happened. But at the same time, when you pressed them, they would give answers. And the very name of the documentary Roadrunner, it comes from one of the producers that was closest to him, talking about, like, he's actually getting to the heart of meaning, right? And a producer says this: Anthony Bourdain was a runner, but he was not going to be able to outrun pain. It's funny, 1,000 years later, after this Koheleth, this preacher, there came along another one, a young Koheleth, a self-made man, rich. And he came to Jesus and he said, I want to try to find out what meaning is all about. And asked Jesus, how do I find eternal life? You might know this story. And Jesus said to him, sell it all and follow me. And the young man went away discouraged. Remember, the disciples, they're perplexed. Come on, man, this is the guy we want to be part of our following. He has it. He's rich. I want to be like him. This is someone I want to follow. And here's the thing. Many of us follow the experiments of Koheleth or Anthony Bourdain or the rich young ruler rather than the experiment that actually has paid out. See, only one experiment has really worked in humanity that didn't lead in death, but led to resurrection. And if we're honest as Christians that many times we run this experiment ourselves of pleasure. It might not look like food and drink and opulence and money and all those things, but if I live the religious life, it will go well for me. God will give me things. He will be useful. He will be instrumental. He will be for my gain. Some of you have run that experiment. So you realize, wait, it's not working the way I want it to. And some of us then start experimenting with hedonism. Well, if God's not going to work, well, maybe alcohol will. Maybe an affair will. Maybe pornography will. Maybe a vacation will. I've run that experiment myself in my life. Thankful in college, started reading Galatians. Started reading Jonathan Edwards. I started listening to this guy named Tim Keller. And I realized from these people, am I following God because he's useful? Or am I following God because in him there is delight? In him there is pleasure. And then a passage from Psalms starts to make a lot more sense. You will make known to me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. In your right hand, there are pleasures forevermore. Joy greater than any earthly laughter. A feast greater than any vintage wine. A city that is greater than any garden or house we can build. And a treasure that will never fade. Then come and delight in the experiment that has succeeded. An experiment that has succeeded even in a broken world.